This is Richard, and I'm reading the editorial. As a callow youth, I once tried to impress a fellow student I was very much taken with by inviting her to come and see Die Walküre, the second opera of Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle, in Leeds. It was in English and conducted by the legendary Wagnerian Reginald Goodall. In those days, there were people who actually understood that high art was as important to the regions as to St. Martin's Lane in London, the home of English National Opera, who at the time were subsidised to take their productions on tour. So off we went, and at the moment Wotan banishes his daughter Brunhilde, one of Wagner's great musical climaxes, overcome by all the musical emotion, she clung on to me. Cracked it, I thought, but unfortunately she fell in love with Wagner and not with me. Nevertheless, Wagner remains one of the leitmotifs of my life. He just keeps cropping up. When the editor of the BBC radio programme Kaleidoscope, who to my annoyance used to send every other producer to the USA and me in the opposite direction, decided I should go with Michael Oliver to cover the Wagner Festival at Bayreuth in Germany, I knew I had hit the mother lode. Apart from entering the Festspielhaus past the local fire brigade, the theatre is built mostly of wood and canvas and is a fabulous fire risk, and attending the whole cycle of operas, we also got to interview the most authentic Wagner figure of the time, Richard's daughter-in-law, Winifred. She was, of course, English and born in Hastings, but her German hauteur was magnificent. She very grandly cancelled us twice, then finally agreed to meet in her own room in the Opera House, where Michael and I sat, surrounded by unseen paintings of Liszt and Wagner, and interviewing this magnificent matriarch, a close friend of Adolf Hitler, although she hated his persecution of the Jews, and a direct line to the master himself. I am now researching not Wagner, but a couple who bought an island so they could escape society's disapproval and enjoy their love. One of them is Cecil Baring, a Baring brother who oversaw the near collapse of Baring's Bank. No, not that one. This near collapse was at the end of the 19th century. Cecil was a thoughtful, withdrawn Englishman who preferred plants, cricket, Greek and Wagner to much else. Though imagine my surprise when I read the following Cecil wrote in the late 1920s. Tariffs, in their origin, the fruit of laudable ambitions, have become in the course of time a sort of Alberich's curse on civilization. That's the premise of Wagner's Ring. By reducing the volume of trade, they bring about bankruptcy and destitution. Tariffs lead to the twilight of civilization and the deterioration of the moral code, just as surely as in the myth Wotan's condoning of the Rheingold gold robbery leads to the dimming of the old standards of faith. Such a stipulation brings before us at once the ideal, which needs imagination to see, of universal free trade, or at least a federation, under a single customs union. A poet's dream, whispers one voice across the Atlantic. Yes, neighbour, but your poet sometimes sees further through your brick wall than your statesman or your bank president. That's the end of the quote from Cecil Baring. Apart from being a 100-year-old condemnation of what is going on in the world at the present, it's that last sentence which resonates with me the most. The poet does indeed enable us to see beyond the brick walls that sometimes surround us, and I thank Cecil Baring for reminding me of that.